The 39 Steps by John Buchan, dramatized for radio by Peter Buckman, with David Rintoul as Richard Hannay. The 39 Steps.
What orders, Captain Hardy?
Let's go and get him, Sergeant Major.
What?
There was no prouder man on earth than Richard Hannay when he took his Lennox Highlanders over the parapets on that glorious and bloody September day. Yet the worst bit of the campaign was a tea party to the show I had been in before the war started.
Did you do what I told you and get into Kiev bonds?
My man says he wouldn't touch anything in the Balkans.
Kiev's in Russia, Clive, and Russia's safe enough. People always fuss about the Balkans, but this'll blow over, like all the others. Don't you think so, Mr. Hannay?
I only know when the experts agree on something, it's pretty well bound to be wrong.
They're all saying Germany's no threat to us.
Exactly.
Nothing's going to happen, Clive. Why, this chap, Kadalevitz...
Who?
Don't you ever read the papers?
Haven't the time, Frank. I pick up all I need to know at the club.
Then you should have picked up the fact that Karadlidis, who is the Greek Prime Minister, is the one man to make sure things stay quiet in his part of the world. If anyone can keep the peace, he can.
What do you think, Hannay?
I beg your pardon?
You've knocked around there a bit, haven't you?
I've never been near the place.
Oh. But you have been abroad.
Not very good on geography, are you, Clive? Mr. Hannay's retired from South Africa. Something to do with prospecting, wasn't it?
Mining engineer, actually.
Find any gold?
A bit.
I say. Are you a millionaire?
Afraid not.
Oh. Well, I was introduced to a chap the other day. Made a million selling sultanas.
Cornered the market, did he?
Something to do with jam, I think.
I'd been 3 months in the old country and was fed up with it. The talk of the ordinary Englishman made me sick. The weather made me liverish. I couldn't get enough exercise, and the amusements of London seemed as flat as soda water that's been standing in the sun. On my way back to the flat I'd hired near Portland Place, I gave half a crown to a beggar because I saw him yawn. He was a fellow sufferer. I vowed I'd give the place one more day to fit me into something. If nothing happened, I'd take the next boat back to the Cape. I was just opening my front door.
Can I speak to you? Can I come in for a minute?
I recognized him as the little man who lived in the top floor flat. He seemed to be controlling himself with an effort.
Gave me a bit of a start there. But come in.
There's nobody else here.
Not a soul. My man Paddock goes off at 7 and comes back in the morning. I can't stand servants living on the premises.
You don't mind if I chain the door.
All right. What's this about?
Say, mind if I have a drink?
No. Come through. Help yourself.
Thanks. It's not, I know it's a mighty liberty, but you look the kind of man who'd understand. Will you do me a good turn?
I'll listen to you. That's all I promise.
You must pardon me if I seem a bit rattled. You see, I happen at this moment to be dead.
Uh-huh. And what does it feel like?
No, I'm not mad. Not yet. Listen, I reckon you're an honest man who's not afraid of playing a bold hand, so I'm going to confide in you. I need help worse than any man ever needed it. And I want to know if I can count you in.
Get on with your yarn and I'll tell you.
Does the name Karalevis mean anything to you?
Heard of him. At the center of this new Balkan crisis they're all shouting about, isn't he? Our people seem to have a lot of faith in him. I gather he's not quite so popular with the gentlemen east of the Rhine.
Well, you can say that again. In fact, Mr. Karalithis is right in their sights. Oh, I'm telling you, sir, I'm afraid I don't have the privilege of your name.
Richard Hanny.
Well, Mr. Hanny, what is going on is much bigger than governments. There are capitalists, anarchists, and financiers out there plotting to make millions by setting the civilized nations at each other's throats. Karalithis is one of the few who can stop them. And that's why they've marked him down.
How do you know all this?
Give me another drink and I'll tell you.
I'll join you.
Thank you. Carry on, Mr.
Scudder. Franklin P. Scudder. I spent the last year on their trail. I got the first hint in an inn on the Arkansas in Tyrol. I collected another clue in a fur shop in the Galician quarter of Buda. Another from the Strangers Club in Vienna, and a fourth in a bookshop off the Reichenstrasse in Leipzig. 10 days ago, I completed my evidence in Paris. They're going to murder Karalithis when he comes here on an official visit on June the 15th. 1 month from now.
Why wait till then?
I think Creasy's got bodyguards who'd kill their grandmothers if they laid a finger on him. But in London, where he's just one more foreign dignitary...
If you're so sure, why don't you warn him off coming?
What? And play their game? No. He's the only man who can sort things out. If he doesn't come, they've won.
Then tip off the British. Surely the police...
The whole of Scotland Yard couldn't save him from these people. They're not playing for beans, my friend. Listen, the killer will be an Austrian, which will make it look as if Vienna and Berlin are involved. Then Russia will go to war with Germany and... all hell will break loose. Unless Franklin P. Scudder is there to stop it. As long as I can stay alive till June 15th.
Are they on to you?
I thought I'd pretty well muddied my trail until last night. There was someone I sort of recognized hanging about this block. Then I found a card in my letterbox. From the man I want least to meet on God's earth. And that's when, Mr. Hanny, I knew I had to die.
I was wondering when we would get round to that.
It's easy enough to get hold of a corpse in London. I hid it in my room and got myself up to look like death. I'm no slouch when it comes to disguises. Then I told my valet that I was feeling pretty bad and sent him home. After that, all I had to do was blow the corpse's jaw away with my revolver, dress it in my pajamas, and leave it on my bed. Since then, I've been waiting around for you to come home. I'm mighty glad I was to see you, too.
And I take it you want to lie low here for a while?
If you'll let me. I couldn't think of anywhere else.
Mm. What kind of people are they who are out to get you?
Well, they're in with the highest, I can tell you that. People you wouldn't suspect in a million years. They call themselves the Black Stone.
What?
The Black Stone, Mr. Hanny, and I can assure you it's no laughing matter. There's a woman, a decoy, to attract Karalithis. She goes under the name Yulia Tsaichenyi. There's a man with a lisp. And then... well, I've met some pretty tough characters in my time, but there's this old man with a young voice who can hood his eyes like a hawk. Just to think about him makes my flesh crawl.
Hmm. You've got proof, I suppose.
It's all down in my little black book. That's what'll scupper them, Mr. Hanny. As long as I survive to tell the tale.
You've told me the wildest yarn I've ever heard, Mr. Scudder. But in my experience, the steepest stories often turn out to be true. I'm prepared to believe you're straight, though I should warn you that if you're not, I'm pretty handy with a gun.
I'd expect no less, sir.
Very well. I'll make you up a bed in the back room. Paddock comes in at 8. What shall I tell him?
You can tell him that your old friend Captain Theophilus Digby of the 40th Gurkhas has come to spend some of his leave with you.
Well, Captain Digby, I think it's about time to turn in, don't you? I went to bed more cheerful than I had been for the past month. Things did happen occasionally, even in this godforsaken metropolis. The police soon found the corpse he prepared, and the papers were full of it. And over the next few days, Scudder told me a whole lot more about the business, though to tell you the truth, I was less interested in the politics than in his adventures.
He spent most of his time reading and smoking and scribbling in his little black book. Then one night I came home about 9:30 for our usual game of chess, at which Scudder always beat me hollow.
Scudder? Are you there, old man?
Scudder?
What I saw made me fall into a cold sweat. My guest was lying sprawled on his back. There was a long knife through his heart, which skewered him to the floor. I'd seen men die before. I'd even killed a few myself, but this cold-blooded indoor murder was different. I covered poor Scudder's staring face with a tablecloth and swallowed several mouthfuls of brandy. Then I sat down to think. It was pretty clear I was in the soup. If I went to the police, they'd probably charge me with Scudder's murder, and I had no pal to speak up for me. Even if I stayed out of jail, it was obvious I'd be the next target on the assassin's list. Yet I felt pretty well bound to carry on Scudder's work. You may think that ridiculous, considering the danger I was in. I'm an ordinary sort of fellow, and certainly no braver than anyone else, yet I hated to see a good man downed. That's what decided me to vanish for the next 3 weeks. When I knew Karolides was safely on his way, I would go to the powers that be and tell them Scudder's story. Maybe they'd believe me, maybe they wouldn't. But the prospect of some action at last comforted me enormously. The first thing was to find Scudder's little black book. I searched the body in vain and went through the flat with a tooth comb, not a trace. I supposed that the enemy had got hold of it. Then I looked at an atlas for a likely place to vanish in, a wild district where at least my Veldkraft would be of some use. I settled on Scotland, for my people were Scotch, and I could pass anywhere as an ordinary Scotsman. There was an early morning train which would get me to Galloway by the late afternoon. The only problem was how to get to St. Pancras without being spotted. Still puzzling at this, I went to bed. Some 3 or 4 troubled hours of sleep later, I woke as the first rays of morning light were beginning to filter through the shutters. I hunted out an old tweed suit, a flannel shirt, and some strong nailed boots, and stuffed a spare shirt, a cloth cap, some handkerchiefs, and a toothbrush into my pockets. I put £50 in gold sovereigns into a money belt, and breakfasted off a whiskey and soda and some biscuits. Then I thought I'd better fill my tobacco pouch. I was poking around the tobacco jar when I felt something small and hard inside it. I drew it out. It was Scudder's little black book. That seemed a good omen. I lifted the cloth I'd put over Scudder's body and was amazed at the peace and dignity of the dead face. Then I sat back and waited. Goodbye, old chap. I'm going to do my best for you. Wish me well, wherever you are.
Milkman, can you spare a minute?
Right, old chap. Yeah?
You look a sporting kind of chap. I've got a bit of a bet on. Lend me your cap and overall for 10 minutes, and there's a sovereign for you.
A queen cap? The ring's yours.
There you are. Now, just keep mum for 10 minutes, will you?
10 minutes, eat?
Good man.
At first I thought there was nobody in the street. Then I caught sight of a policeman 100 yards down, and a loafer shuffling past on the other side. Some impulse made me raise my eyes to the house opposite, and there at the first floor window was a face. As the loafer passed, he looked up, and it may have been my fancy, but I'm pretty certain a signal was exchanged. I can tell you, as soon as I rounded the corner...
If it's the Glasgow train you want, you missed it.
Not yet, I haven't!
T
ticket, please.
Oh, I didn't quite have time.
This is first class, you know.
Well,
you better come along with me.
What for?
Third class is more your line, I'd have thought. Come on, this way, if you please.
He marched me off to a compartment occupied by a morose sailor and a stout woman with a small child.
Here you are. Third class smoker. Now, where are you going? Do you know or don't you? I haven't got all day, you know.
I'll tuck a single to Newton Stewart.
Right, now we're getting somewhere. Newton Stewart. Right, here you are. And next time, try to buy a ticket before you catch train. It'll save us all a lot of bother.
It's a safe fact, catching trains.
Gert needed a scotch tongue to put him in his place. He was complaining of this woman's way no hain a ticket, and her no yet flower.
Impudence.
And he objected to me spitting.
So my new life started in an atmosphere of protest against authority. I reminded myself that a week ago I had been finding the world dull. I waited until Leeds to get a luncheon basket, and after I'd eaten, I settled down to study Scudder's little book. It was full of names and figures which made no sense to me, but I was sure there was a cipher involved. I thought I was pretty good at such things, and I worried away at it for hours until I fell asleep. And woke up, none the wiser, at Dumfries, just in time to bundle out and get into the slow Galloway train, which rumbled into a land of little wooded glens, and then into a great, wide moorland place, gleaming with lochs. I got out at a forgotten little station and struck out along the road. It was a gorgeous spring evening, with every hill showing as clear as a cut amethyst. The air had the queer, rooty smell of bogs, but it was as fresh as mid-ocean, and it actually made me feel light-hearted. If you believe me, I was like a boy out for a holiday tramp rather than a man of 37 very much wanted by the police. I spent the night in a herdsman's cottage, and the following day I doubled back on my tracks in order to foil any pursuers. I picked up a local train and found a compartment that was empty but for a sleeping shepherd and his dog. There was a copy of The Scotsman on the seat, but though there were two columns on the so-called Portland Place murder, there was nothing about identifying the murderer. I was feeling pretty confident until we slowed down at the station where I'd got out the day before, and I saw the station master being interviewed by three men, one of whom was busily taking notes. I sat well back, though I couldn't help smiling when I saw them stare solemnly at the road I'd walked the day before. If they were the local police, I'd given them the slip for a while longer, since the train soon picked up speed. And then my sleeping companion, who was plainly very drunk, woke up.
May we pass through Paulnacky?
Aye.
That's what comes of being a teetotaler.
And that a fact?
Aye, and a strangian. I took the pledge last Martinmas, and I hain't touched a drop of whiskey since I. No, even at Hogmanay, though I was sair tempted. And that's all I get. I heed hotter than hell fire and twa een looking different ways for the summer.
What did it?
A drink they call brandy. Being a teetotaler, I keep it after the whiskey, but I was nipping all day at this. Brandy. I'll no be weel for a fortnight.
My plan had been to get out at a station down the line, but the train gave me a better opportunity, for it came to a halt at the end of a culvert. I looked out. My companion still slept. No one else appeared, so I opened the door and dropped quickly into the hazel bushes that fringed the line. And it would have been all right, but for the shepherd's infernal dog.
Help, dog! There's a man here trying to kill himself!
Murder! Let's get on there, my dog!
There's a body on the line!
I could not have made a more public departure had I left with a bugle and a brass band. However, the shepherd luckily provided a diversion. Somehow or other, he fell from the train with his dog, which promptly bit the guard who jumped down to help. I crawled through the undergrowth for about a quarter of a mile, and when I looked back, the train had started again and was vanishing into the distance. I was alone in a landscape as peaceful as any in the world. Yet for the first time, I felt the terror of the hunted. I knew that plane was looking for me. I also knew it did not belong to the police. I began to think less well of the countryside I had chosen to hide in. These heather hills were no good if my enemy was in the sky. What I needed was a house.
As when a griffin through the wilderness, with winged step o'er hill and moory dale, pursues the Arimaspian.
Good evening.
Oh, good evening to you. It's a fine night for the road.
Is this place an inn?
It is, sir, and I am the landlord. I hope you'll stay the night, for to tell you the truth, I've had no company for a week.
You're young to be an innkeeper, are you not?
Yeah, my father died and left me this business. It wasn't my first choice of profession.
Which was?
I want to write books.
Man, I've often thought that an innkeeper should make the best storyteller in the world.
Oh, not now. Maybe in the old days when you had pilgrims and ballad makers and highwaymen on the road, but now nobody comes here but motor cars full of fat women who stop for lunch, and a fisherman or two, or the shooting tenants in the August. There's not much material to be got out of that.
You think that adventure is found only in the tropics, or among gentry in red shirts? Maybe you're rubbing shoulders with it at this moment.
Confound romance, and all unseen romance brought up the 9:15, eh?
I've a true tale for you, then. And a month from now, you can make a novel out of it.
So, there you have it. You're looking for adventure? And here I brought it to you. The devils are after me, and the police are after them. I tell you, it's a race I mean to win, and shall, with your help.
It is pure Conan Doyle.
You believe me?
Of course I do. I believe everything out of the common. It's the normal one ought to distrust.
I reckon they're off my track for the moment, but I must lie low for a couple of days. Will you take me in?
You can lie as snug here as if you were in a moss hole, and I'll see that no one blabs. You can trust me.
I was safe for a while, and once I'd sent the young innkeeper off each morning to fetch the papers, I had time to settle down to Scudder's notebook in earnest. It was the keyword I couldn't find, until the name Yulia Tsechenyi suddenly flashed across my memory. She was the decoy for Karolides, Scudder had said, and the five letters of her first name gave me the position of the vowels, as her surname gave me the numbers for the main consonants. In half an hour I was able to decipher Scudder's notes, and I read, with a whitish face and fingers drumming on the table.
You the innkeeper?
I am. Can I help you?
Got anyone staying?
More to the point. Got a whiskey and soda? This way, gentlemen.
Who is it?
It's me. There's two chaps in the dining room having whiskies and sodas. They asked all about you and said they hoped to meet you here.
You're certain it's me they're after?
They described you right down to your shirt and boots. But don't worry, I told them you were here last night and went off on a motorcycle this morning.
How did they take that?
The dark one swore like a navvy.
What do they look like?
There's a thin fellow with bushy brows, dark hair and dark eyes. The other one's fat and smiles all the time. Oh, aye, and he's got a lisp.
A lisp? Would you say either of them was, well, foreign?
As English as the king, both of them.
Right. We'll send them off on a bit of a wild goose chase. Take this down and say you found it in my room. Suggest they return it to me if they catch me up. Here.
Leave it to me.
In German, I'd written, as if it were part of a letter. The American had got onto this, but he could not act for a fortnight. I doubt if I can do any good now, especially as Karolides is uncertain about his plans. I will do the best I can, but if the Black Stone...
The dark chap went white as death and swore like blazes, while the fat one whistled and looked far from pleased. They gave me half a sovereign for the drinks and wouldn't even wait for the change.
Excellent. Now, this is what I'd like you to do. Cycle over to Newton Stewart and get hold of the chief constable. Give him a detailed description of those two men and say you think they have something to do with the Portland Place murder. You can swear you heard them talking about it. Tell them you think they'll be back, and they will, I promise you, when they discover they're on a false trail. And get the police to send a few men over, bright and early. Have you got all that?
I think so.
Off you go, then.
But if I'm not believed?
My dear fellow, you have to be something of an actor if you want people to believe in the characters in your books. Here's an excellent opportunity to practice. He went off like a lamb while I puzzled out the rest of Scudder's notes. What I discovered was that I'd been told a pack of lies. All that stuff about a conspiracy of financiers and anarchists was eyewash. But the 15th of June was going to be a day of destiny much bigger than the killing of a foreign politician. I saw why Scudder had tried to fob me off. He'd stumbled on something so vast he wanted to keep the credit for himself. And in a strange way, that made me believe him even more. I smoked in a chair till daylight, for I could not sleep.
Mr. Baird?
Yes?
Chief Constable sent us about the Portland Place murder.
Well, that's right, officer. Why don't you put your car in the coach house? Then you and your men can hide in the inn.
20 minutes later, I saw from my window a second car approach. It stopped 200 yards off in the shelter of a wood. Then two men got out.
Good morning to you, gentlemen.
Morning. Has he returned?
Who do you mean?
You know very well who we mean, my friend.
I scribbled a quick line of thanks to my host, opened the window, dropped quietly into the bushes, and made my way unobserved to the car at the far edge of the wood. Over the roar of that 40-horsepower engine, I fancied that the wind brought me the sound of angry voices. I drove that car for all she was worth across the crisp roads on that shining May morning, all the while thinking about Scudder's notes, especially the little bits that made no sense, like the phrase that occurred half a dozen times inside brackets, 39 steps, it said. And the last time he used it, he'd added 39 steps. I counted them. High tide, 10:17 p.m. About midday, I drove into a village and thought I might stop and eat. However, I noticed a policeman outside the post office, reading a telegram with the postmistress. They looked up as they heard me approach.
Excuse me a minute, sir. Hey, you! Stop! Stop!
My friends back at the inn must have been more persuasive than I thought. From now on, I kept to the loneliest roads. As evening drew in, I was beginning to think seriously of something to eat and a place to hide out for the night, when, only a mile or so to the south, coming straight towards me and flying low, all I could think of was to get to the leafy cover of the valley. I went like blue lightning. Of course, I tried to avoid the other car, but I smashed straight through the hedge. Fortunately, I managed to grab hold of a branch before the 1,000-guinea tour I had borrowed tipped over and crashed into the stream below.
I say, are you all right?
The voice belonged to a tall young man in goggles and a leather ulster.
Bless my soul, I thought you were a goner. I'm most frightfully sorry about your car. Looks as if it's had it.
The fault is mine, sir. I'd call it a stroke of luck. I didn't kill you. Never mind myself.
Yeah. Look here, I'm in a bit of a hurry, but you're the right sort of fellow, and I can spare a quarter of an hour. My house is just round the corner. I'll see you clothed and fed and put to bed till you feel right. I suppose your kit's in the burn along with the car.
It's in my pocket. I'm a colonial and travel light.
A colonial? Bless my soul, you're the very fellow I've been praying for, Baguette. Are you by any blessed chance a free trader?
I am.
Then get into my car, my dear fellow. You can choose any one of my suits and take a snack in your pocket. We'll have supper when we get back.
Get back from where?
I've got to be at the Masonic Hall at 8 o'clock to address a meeting on free trade. I had a colonial ex-premier coming, but he wired saying he'd got influenza. I'd planned to speak for 10 minutes. I had the devil's own job trying to find something that'll last 40. I'm the liberal candidate for this part of the world, which is an infernal Tory stronghold. So you see, Mr. You haven't told me your name, have you?
Twisden.
Bless my soul, you're not related to old Tommy Twisden of the 60th?
Afraid not.
Never mind. As I was saying,